WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work.
I'm Adora Namigadde, in for Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Thousands of Amazon warehouse workers and Starbucks employees are on strike for the holidays. According to the union representing Starbucks workers, the strike today has expanded to more than 5,000 employees in 300 U.S. locations, including more than a dozen around Chicagoland. The Teamsters Union says nearly 10,000 Amazon workers across the U.S. are on strike, including at an Amazon facility in Skokie. To shed some light on what's going on, we turned to Bob Bruno. He's a professor at U of I's School for Labor and Employment Relations. There's two major strikes at two of the biggest retailers during the busy holiday season, so I began by asking him if this timing is coincidental?
No, not at all. The workers at both of these companies really are trying to bring to light the working conditions and the problems they have with their employer. And they're trying to leverage this important holiday season because the employer is really depending on having those workers available to try to pressure the employer to slow down business, to hurt their bottom line a bit, to send a strong message to the consumers about the working conditions there, to try to win some support and thereby add leverage to their objectives.
What are the working conditions?
Well, if you start with Amazon, they're pretty deplorable. And a Senate report was just released, really demonstrating the long hours, the number of workers who are injured, and the company's relative indifference really to creating working conditions where the workers can do so in a safe way. And at Starbucks, frankly, scheduling becomes an issue. Obviously, pay, benefits, having more voice for workers. And keep in mind, these are companies that are really large, mega brands, very, very profitable with the capacity to pay considerably more and create better working conditions.
So you mentioned the conditions, right, with Amazon workers working very long hours, sometimes getting injured on the job, and with Starbucks employees having problems with their scheduling. But at the center of the demands for both companies and with both strikes is contract negotiations. The Teamsters Union wants Amazon to meet demands around better pay, benefits, safer working conditions, etc. Who would you say has the power in these standoffs? Is it the workers or is it the large corporations?
Yeah. Well, our American political economic system really grants significant power to the employer. And our labor law is very weak. And so, therefore, historically, the only way workers have been able to make significant change is to act militantly, is to show solidarity. And while a global company with billions of dollars of revenues certainly has a lot of structural advantages, workers can, over time, really begin to change the way the corporation is behaving. And strikes have historically been the most effective means for winning negotiation agreements, for changing corporate behavior, from affecting public attitude, and even winning political support. So really building that kind of solidarity, one worker at a time, is the way that the labor movement and workers have made a difference in altering American capitalism in any particular era that you're looking at.
So let's talk about the impact of the labor movement here specifically. One of the sites of the Amazon warehouse strikes is in Skokie, and Starbucks workers are also striking in Chicago, including at a location in Edgewater. What power do unions have here in the Chicago area?
Well, keep in mind that there is a high density of union members, first of all, in Chicago. It is one of the most unionized cities in the country. It prides itself on being a labor town. Its political class is typically at least friendly and responsive to organized labor. It's also a community where the consuming public has a strong sensitivity to its local working class. So I would think here there's the ability to win public approval, to have support from the political leadership in the city, and also to see solidarity across different work groups, meaning that unions would work together more effectively here than in some other places. That suggests some long-term probability of success. It's a difficult slog whenever you're fighting a corporation, but there is a culture, if you will, of backing workers, particularly our most vulnerable workers, or workers who work at Starbucks who are friendly, who interact with the customer, who live locally. I think Chicago is the kind of town where an anti-worker animus is just going to be perceived as simply unfair.
And you mentioned that striking is one of the largest militant actions that a body of workers can really take in their own defense. Would you say that it's accurate to say that unions have been spending the last handful of years kind of building up their power and they're not afraid to show that power?
Yeah, we've seen considerable increases in worker militancy really since 2021. And we've seen it across all industries. We've seen it with workers who have worked under labor agreements like the United Auto Workers and win better agreements. But also we've seen it amongst workers like the Starbucks workers and the Amazon workers who are trying to get that very, very difficult first contract. By comparisons to other periods, the strike totals aren't anywhere near as high. But if you look at where they were pre-COVID to where they were in 2021, and then we look at the results of those strikes, which have almost always been very successful. They've always led to better working agreements for workers. The capacity to strike, which has something to do with the labor market and worker shortages, things we've all heard. But workers have taken advantage of that, and they see the strike as more effective. So it raises their consciousness that this is the way to go about doing it. And it keeps signaling to employers that the cost of resistance is going to keep ratcheting up and up.
Do you think these strikes could be part of a larger trend, Professor Bruno?
Well, you know, as we've just said, the strike totals went up in 2021. And in fact, you can go back to 2018 and we saw an increase in strikes amongst teachers. So there does seem to be a greater willingness on the part of organized labor to use its collective bargaining and withhold its labor. But every strike is part of a specific set of labor management relations in a specific industry. So while generically it's about working conditions, it's about benefits, what Starbucks workers are experiencing is certainly different in the actual application than someone working in a logistics center, in a warehouse at Amazon. And therefore, sometimes it can be hard to see the commonalities. But to the degree that the labor movement can communicate that lifting the conditions for one set of workers helps to raise the floor for another set of workers. And if workers see that a group of workers have really improved their condition by striking, then they're more likely to do so. So in that sense, those successful actions start to replicate themselves, even if there's really no strategic organizing of them. Clearly, the market is such that workers feel like they can be more successful. And in this particular case, the company's not really giving them much option because these workers don't have a contract yet anywhere. And they're insisting that the company negotiate with them. Amazon won't even treat these workers as their employees. They're pretending, frankly, that they're not. And in Starbucks' case, they said they would negotiate a contract, but then they come to the table with almost no wage increase. And so it's hard to take that seriously. So to the degree that one strike can demonstrate to another group of workers that withholding their labor can be a powerful means to improve their working conditions, then each of these strikes is really interdependent.
So what do workers do in this scenario where Amazon doesn't treat certain employees like their own employees or with Starbucks not really responding well to the demands?
You stop working and you communicate in the most effective way that you can what those conditions are. And you speak to issues around fairness and workplace justice. You tell a story about what work is for these individuals. Now, what do people really do in that fulfillment center at Amazon? What really is the working conditions of that barista, that person working in your neighborhood cafe? And you tell a story about how both of these industries, both retail service and also logistics, are two large employers, very important to America's middle class. And you try to combine the storytelling with the power of withholding labor to signal to the company that this isn't going to go away, that this is only going to become more chaotic, it's going to become more costly to the company, and you use the solidarity of the workers to build a sense of power and an accomplishment. And once workers believe that they're worth more and can actually take action to achieve it, then the employer's got a much stronger group of employees to have to contend with.
So, Professor, as we head into 2025 with a not-so-union-friendly president going to be sworn into office, the Biden administration has generally had pro-union policies. But we're wondering, what does the Republican president and specifically Donald Trump mean for unions and worker power in 2025?
Nothing good, for sure. This is a very hostile president towards organized labor. Remember, when Donald Trump campaigned the first time in 2016, he said he was pro right to work. He's been opposed to minimum wage increases. He's a fan of people like Elon Musk, who would just walk in and illegally fire workers. Project 2025 was filled with some very draconian anti-worker, anti-labor provisions. So I think labor's running into some serious headwinds, and they should expect the decisions that come from the National Labor Relations Board, which oversees workers in the private sector, decisions that will come from various courts, actions that will come from administrative units within the Department of Labor are likely going to be very, very friendly to big oligarchic corporations and antagonistic towards workers, which is even more reason why workers need to find their own voice. They need to build relationships with one another, break down barriers based on race and gender, nationality, language, and really see themselves as workers and raise that consciousness. Now more than ever, unions and workers who are non-union, who want to be union, really need to be investing in their own collective power. Admittedly, it's never easy organizing a union in this country. And certainly the next 4 years will be really challenging to do it. But that's the time, frankly, to take advantage of the skills you have, the industries you're in, the communities that you're in, the relationships you have with customers. Use whatever market power that you have to push back.
And speaking of the upcoming administration, we really want to talk about Trump's vice president, J.D. Vance. He promotes himself as someone who is very pro-worker and a pro-union populist. What do you think having him as part of the administration will mean for workers' rights?
I don't think it's going to advance worker rights at all, because I think that's a false. I think that's a false narrative. That's how Vice President Vance promotes himself, but there's certainly little in his voting record that suggests that at all. I think that he is aligned, certainly with the president, when it comes to favoring large capital interest. I do think he will continue to use rhetoric to try to appeal, at least to white workers. But there's little in his understanding of the economy. There's little in his voting record to suggest at all that he understands what workers need. So as opposed to the way Kamala Harris, as vice president, actually took some leadership around worker organizing and led a task force around organizing and the importance of organized labor. I think this vice president will be more rhetorical in his appeal, and certainly will not lead any rethinking about the balance of power in the workplace. I think the Trump administration, though, will be somewhat favorable to select unions who they feel can offer them a bit of political cover. But that is more of a divide and conquer strategy than a legitimate embrace of workers and organized labor.
Thank you so much for explaining all this to us. That's Bob Bruno, professor at the School for Labor and Employment Relations at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for inviting me here.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Meha Ahmad and edited by Dan Tucker. It was mixed by Ari Mejia. Get the news, politics, and culture happening in Chicago by subscribing to our podcast. We post episodes every morning and afternoon, Monday through Friday, with a bonus episode on Saturdays. Sign up at wbez.org/resetnews. I'm Adora Namigadde, in for Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.